You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
It's him. He's alive.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former wide receiver Mike Pritchard. Let me remind you about Mike's background. He was born on Shaw Air Force Base in South Carolina and grew up in Las Vegas. Played his college ball at the University of Colorado, where he helped them to a share of the national championship back in 1990. And that season, Mike was voted team MVP. He was inducted into Colorado's Hall of Fame in November of 2015. He was a first-round draft pick, the 13th overall selection by the Atlanta Falcons in 1991, and he played in the league from 91 to 99 for the Falcons, Broncos, and Seahawks. And over the course of his career, he had 422 receptions for just under 5,200 yards, and he scored 26 touchdowns. And we are honored that he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Mike, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Chris and Bob. Good to be with you guys again.
Mike, I want to start our time with you tonight by getting your thoughts on the Broncos. How do you feel about them hiring Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio as their new head coach?
You know, guys, I think it was a pretty good hire considering how far the Broncos have fallen and what is needed to help them rise back up. I think it was a good fit. You know, Vic Fangio, I had the misfortune of playing against his defenses for a number of years, and when he was really regarded as a linebackers coach, too highly regarded as a linebackers coach, when he coached the Dome Patrol out there in New Orleans with Pat Swilling, Vaughn Johnson, Ricky Jackson, and then Sam Mills. I mean, all those guys went to the Pro Bowl in 92. And he's a football coach. He's a straightforward, no fluff, I'm going to give you what I got kind of coach. Give me my whistle and let's get to work. And to me, that's exactly what the Broncos need right now. They needed somebody that could command, demand, and then get the best out of the players.
And, Mike, the Broncos have got Case Keenum for one more year as their quarterback. When you look at his contract, he's a guy that's going to jump from $8 million a year to $18 next year. And you throw in a roster bonus of $3 million, which he is due in March. So his cap number is going to be $21 million. Do you expect that he's going to be the starting quarterback come next year? Do you think the Broncos might look elsewhere?
I think all options are on the table, to be honest with you. John Elway, as president of football operations / GM, has about three more years remaining on his contract. And if you remember John Elway, he's the ultimate competitor and he wants to win. He hates losing. I mean, absolutely hates losing. Unfortunately for him, they've lost the last 2 years. So I think 2019, this season, John Elway is going to do whatever it takes or whatever he can to help this team win. And I think they're going to explore all options. That means people like Joe Flacco that might become available. There's some other quarterbacks that I think they might be intrigued by if they become available, but certainly look into the draft. But yeah, Case Keenum's under contract, but I think he still has a lot to prove in order to be John Elway's guy, because, the Broncos didn't win with him last year. So still a lot of work to do for Case Keenum, but I think Case Keenum understands that. He wants to accept the challenge. But, yeah, but like I said earlier, I think John Elway will look high and low for a quarterback that can help him win.
And, Mike, being out there in Las Vegas, I got to imagine you're a guy that played in Denver, you played in Seattle, you've had your fill of going up against the Raiders and a rivalry with the Raiders, and now you got the Raiders coming into your backyard. Excited about that?
You know what? We never thought, growing up in Las Vegas, Nevada, with the gambling and, the NFL, they were really staunch against any type of mention about their product in Las Vegas. There was a Super Bowl on TV, I believe it was NBC, and there was a Vegas show. And they wouldn't even let the Vegas show advertise the Super Bowl, even though it was on that network. That's how combination of the league and Vegas, just a mere mention. So we never thought that this would happen. And now that it has happened and is going to happen, the stadium is ahead of schedule. Certainly everybody's getting more and more excited about the Raiders.
Bob, questions for Mike?
Always good to talk to you, Mike. And I want to stay on the Vegas thing. And take you back again to your high school days. And I was doing a little research, Mike, and I found out that a running back that used to play up here in New York, Larry Heater, went to the same high school, Rancho, as you did. Number one, did your paths ever cross with Larry? He played in the early 80s up here in New York. And second, just talk about your high school experience there and high school football in general in Nevada.
You know, our paths did cross. I got to meet Larry Heater, I think it was my sophomore year there at Rancho. And, you know, great guy and somebody that I knew about. I didn't know too much about, but I did want to meet him and find out more and more about him. I did, and that was great. That was a nice encounter. At that time, of course, I never thought I'd play in the National Football League, but when you meet somebody that did play in the National Football League, you know, you're awestruck and you just want to hear everything. We also had, growing up there in Las Vegas, you know, Randall Cunningham was about to embark on his career. Gerald Riggs was in the National Football League. And, you know, we had a couple other guys that were on their way to major colleges or in the National Football League. So I got motivated, you know, and it was a small town at the time. I think we had 10 high schools and everybody knew everybody. And it was just one of those tight communities in which, you know, if somebody made it big, everybody's going to know about it. So I had a lot of motivation, but also some great influences along the way, and Larry Heater was one of them.
And, Mike, take us back. When you're named a first-round draft pick, it's such an honor, and you probably, until it happens, you're kind of awestruck, and in a way, your life changes. I mean, what do you remember from that day forward? I mean, did the phone start calling from friends you hadn't heard from? I mean, did you have to focus more? What was family life back then?
Oh, it was incredible. Well, first of all, no call waiting. So that was interesting compared to now. So you hang up the phone and then somebody was calling you. I mean, as soon as your name's announced on during the draft and you know, literally your life just changed. I guess it's like hitting the lottery. You don't know what to expect, and then all of a sudden you have this massive responsibility, and so it makes you grow up faster. It makes you put things in perspective earlier, and you know, that's really what happened. It was the immediacy of everything. I mean, one day I'm sitting in the living room in my underwear because I just woke up, and then, you know, an hour and a half later, I'm drafted 13th overall into the National Football League, and then I fly first class to Atlanta. So, yeah, it was just a whirlwind. And when I think back on it, it's a blur. But at the same time, I created a lot of great memories and had a lot of great experiences as well.
Mike, you got an opportunity to play in the playoffs a couple of times. You got to go with the Falcons in the early 90s and Seattle and later on in the 90s. And we really wanted to get you thought. We hear all the time that the game gets faster when you get to the playoffs,
right?
And it gets more intense when you get to the playoffs. Did you experience that? Was it like that?
Well, it was. I think back-to-back college national championship games kind of prepared me for that, because – you know, you're the only game on. Now, back then in college, you had the Orange Bowl and then the Sugar Bowl was after us, but our game was the marquee game because it was for the national title, and you kind of know the spotlight's on you. So my rookie year in Atlanta, we did get to the wild card. We beat the Saints in the wild card round and got to the divisional round. And the game is faster. It's more intense. It's win or go home. And it's really understood. I mean, typically, when you're practicing during the week, during the regular season, you know, you got a little bit of media, you have some onlookers and people that want to go. But when you're in the playoffs, there's national media, there's local media. It's more intense. It's really, you're really under the spotlight, and you really understand how important this game is. So now that you're in a divisional round, you're one step closer to the Super Bowl. Really, one step closer to the conference championship situation. So you'll see the guys turn it up a few more notches this weekend. I mean, last weekend was great. But this weekend, you'll see the guys turn it up a little bit more because they just know what's at stake.
And Mike, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Falcons. And you look around here. I'm here in Atlanta. Everyone was really excited about the Falcons and their future, even after they lost the Super Bowl, as painful as that was a few years ago. The thought was, well, you know what? Hey, this is a young team. We didn't expect them to be, you know, be there this soon. Here they are. So we're only going to get, you know, better and better going forward. So these next few years are going to be very exciting. The second year after that year, they come back the following year and they lose in the division round. This year, finishing 7-9. And, you know, now they've got some coaching changes and things of that nature. So the expectation was this is going to be a young team that builds and gets better and better. Unfortunately, it's gone the other way, where they've gotten a little bit worse over the last couple of years. Your thoughts on what you've seen from the Falcons?
Well, I think when you have a Super Bowl appearance and you're that close, I mean, the Falcons really should have won that Super Bowl or had a championship, but it didn't happen. And you try so hard to get back. A lot of things have changed. I mean, and that's what you can't control in a National Football League, all the turnover. So you wish that you had people for, you know, longer with their contracts. Like, for instance, if the Falcons still had Kyle Shanahan, you know, with Matt Ryan, and you still had healthy bodies and healthy players, then maybe you get another shot at it. To me, that's been the benefit of the Patriots and why they've been a dynasty for so long, is because, you know, you pretty much have the same coaching staff and not a lot of turnover on the roster. You have some turnover, but not a ton. And so they get back there repeatedly. But then, you know, you kind of go through the transition. You have to tear it apart. To me, that happened with Atlanta. It was just accelerated. When you lose coaches, there's no continuity. You get new coaches and people aren't on the same page. Still a lot of talent with the Falcons, that right, not consistent enough to sustain what they established, certainly when they went to the Super Bowl.
And Mike, I want to go back and get your thoughts on your alma mater, the University of Colorado. Boy, things started out so well this season, winning 5 in a row, you know, starting out 5-0. We had Chad Brown on the show not that long ago when they were in the midst of that, and thought, boy, you know, could this be a team that that wins a division in the Pac-12, maybe a Pac-12 title? Could this be a team we're talking about as a surprise for the playoffs? And then, boom, they lose 7 games in a row, and it costs head coach Mike McIntyre his job, a guy who was just named Coach of the Year a couple of seasons ago. But your thoughts on what's going on at Colorado?
Well, we like what's going on off the field. Brand new facilities, upgraded facilities, state-of-the-art. Of course, the school is highly thought of. The profile is there. We're in the Pac-12. Unfortunately, though, for the football program, the success on the field just hasn't been consistent. I mean, Pac-12 championship game, lose that. This year, this past season, really started off the season, got ranked in the country, and really thought that, wow, at the end of the schedule, you know, we could have some big things on the horizon, whether it's a Pac-12 championship, maybe you're looking at the playoffs because you're undefeated. But then it fell apart. And I mean, literally fell apart when you lose as many games as you did. I think the Buffs lost every single game after starting 5-0. So it was just disappointing. But we have a guy like Rick George, who's our athletic director, and he was our recruiting coordinator when we won the national title. And he wants to see the Buffs on top again. He wants to see us win another national title. And he's not going to stop until that happens. So we're excited about that. It's just everything's new. You know, we get Mel Tucker. He's got a new staff, and he's recruiting well, and everything's new and a lot of excitement. But, you know, once it dials down and certainly you get the season started, we see what it looks like. Maybe the excitement and the confidence will come back. But make no mistake, I think we're all shocked right now because we thought it was trending the right way, and sad to see Coach McIntyre leave or get fired. But change was inevitable, and now we're excited about the future, but just, you know, just tempered excitement because we just don't know what's going to happen.
Bob, a couple more for Mike before we let him go.
Yeah, Mike, and your 92 and 93 years with the Falcons were just spectacular. You had more than 150 catches. You had 12 touchdowns. And what I was surprised to find out, Mike, you were catching balls from four different guys back then. I mean, Chris Miller, our friend, was one of them. You had Wade Wilson, Tolliver, and guys like Bobby Hebert. Out of all of them, Mike, did you ever get used to one guy? I mean, did you have more reps with one more than the other? And I mean, it goes to tell me that kind of accomplishment is incredible when you did not have just one guy and can concentrate on his style. You were just catching passes.
Yeah, you know, Chris was awesome. Chris Miller time, we called him. He was awesome. He unfortunately for him, he got hurt. You know, he was a Pro Bowl quarterback and really lit up the stat sheet, was helping us, you know, get to the playoffs and everything. But he just got hurt and that was unfortunate. So we kind of had to scramble. And so you have Billy Joe Tolliver. I mean, you had Wade Wilson, you had Bobby Hebert, just because you're trying to find guys, that could play at Chris's level. And then also stay healthy, but it's just, you get to work with who is going that week and you have to focus. And, you know, certainly you put in extra time. Even the quarterbacks worked hard too. And, in those days, we really stayed after practice, just making sure we were on the same page and, that we were running a route set that the quarterback expected us to run and, at the depth that they expected us to be at. And then it was just our job that's what we prided ourselves on. And we're able to do that.
And finally, Mike, in 99, when you left the game, here you are. You're still a young man, 30 years old. You still were playing at a very good level. Did you go out on your own terms? And was it, how tough of a transition was it?
Well, it was tough because we just got Mike Holmgren to Seattle, and I just signed a new contract. And he came up to me and said, look, you're going to be my flanker. You're going to catch a lot of balls. You're going to make a lot of magic. We were going to win a lot of games. But unfortunately, I got hurt in training camp. I blew out my left knee where my meniscus was completely torn. So I was bone on bone instantly. And I sprained and tore a couple of ligaments, and we had to do some surgery. I came back and played later on in the year, but it just wasn't the same without a meniscus. So I lost a lot of quickness and a lot of lateral movement because of the pain. So I had to leave the game that way. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I knew a lot of exciting things were coming, but it was just unfortunate that happened that year. But we went to the playoffs and I got to play and lose against Dan Marino, which I don't know if I should be happy about that or not, but you know, he's a legendary guy, and if you have to lose in the playoffs to Dan Marino on a fourth quarter drive, then I'll take it. But it was a great experience, and just unfortunate with that injury.
Mike, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing. Follow you online and on social media.
Absolutely, thanks. Everybody can follow me on Twitter at MIPritchard. That's PRITCHARD. You can also listen to, I do a radio show here locally in Denver on 104.3 The Fan, Pritchard and Cecil, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So tune in if you can. You can also catch that on demand as well.
Mike, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. Always a lot of fun getting to spend some time with you. We hope you'll come back and do it again real soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Absolutely. Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Mike. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you. You too.
That is former wide receiver Mike Pritchard. And, Bob, when you look at the things that Mike accomplished over the course of his career, very good wide receiver. I do remember those years in Denver a lot better than I remember the years in Atlanta and Seattle, just because, obviously, with the guys he got to team up with. But a spectacular wide receiver. A really knowledgeable guy, and certainly a guy that's becoming more and more one of our favorites.
And those good years in Atlanta, I mentioned, Chris, 92, 93, were under a defensive coach, Glanville. Can you imagine him playing in a Holmgren offense? That would have been great to find. Would have loved to see it. He would have
been
close to, if not over, 100 catches. So that was always a pleasure talking to that man.
Yes, it is. All right, we've got Tony Collins hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tony on the other side of this real quick station break.